Welcome to Prac Ready, Clinical Education in One Coffee. Joined today by Matt Cooper and Craig Taylor. Good afternoon, Craig.
Good afternoon, Matt. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
I'm superb.
Mate, what a what a fantastic podcast we've just done and released the other week with Martin from the Resilience Project. I hope you all enjoyed that. It was a fantastic experience for both of us, and something that I think not only people university leavers will get a lot from, but I certainly feel like as a 10 plus year practitioner, I got plenty from it, and I'm sure you feel the same, Craig.
His enthusiasm and genuine excitement for his work was palpable.
Yeah.
Interacting with him after speaking with him, I left feeling better about myself, and we were just talking about the general principles. I hadn't actually done any of it.
Yeah, exactly right. Which was an interesting one, Craig, because after we released it, we actually received an email, and the students asked to remain anonymous. Sorry, it's not a student, it's a new practitioner, someone who's a first year out practice. And this person's basically said they've currently been working full time for 9 months and seeing on average about 48 patients a week. And although the numbers are a pat on my back, starting to feel and get a bit complacent with his management of patients and becoming a bit of a robot, his words, not mine. And so it's a really interesting point, Craig, and something that I think would be a great conversation is about complacency in practice. And, full disclosure, this is obviously going to be a general conversation, but I would be lying to say if I didn't have times where I felt exactly the same way, straight off. And within that first year of practice, you certainly go from having a lot of time on your hands to hopefully not having much time on your hands in a clinical setting, that you're not dealing with it. So, to be aware of this situation, I think, is a good thing. You may see it as a negative, but I actually think it's a positive that this person is aware that they're doing this, and it gives them the opportunity to produce some strategies, I guess, to get on top of that complacency.
Yeah, we do talk about that first sort of year or two of practice. You are effectively still learning a huge amount in your interactions with patients and the way that your clinical practice will develop. And it's why often we'll talk about not targeting too much CPD in the first couple of years. Obviously, there's minimum requirements across different professions, but you're already doing so much learning in the practice. And we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to meet these lofty expectations. But often the side effect of that is we get caught up in the instance and in the moment of patient to patient to patient, and we don't actually have a lot of time to self-reflect on how we are treating. And self-reflection in our industries is so important, because otherwise you do end up getting 9 months down the track and feeling like you've been a robot for a period of time.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, Craig, and it's certainly something that you find. I suppose it depends on your home situation and your friendship groups as well. I've certainly found my friendship group, particularly high school groups and some of my other friendship groups, aren't in health. And so they don't actually get that understanding. But there is a commonality, I guess, in the sense of people can feel overwhelmed in situations. They can certainly feel like they're not doing a good job. And I think there's common trends in that. And in that sense. And so it is really important to, if you're identifying that, I would like you to think of, some of the positive things that you're doing, not just falling straight to the negative, but, you've obviously, if you're moving through your first year and you're almost fully booked, you're doing something right. And you're obviously building rapport with patients, you're obviously following through your treatment management plans, hopefully right to the end there with your patients, and that's reflecting in the numbers that you're seeing. So, Martin spoke about, gratitude, but maybe taking a little bit of pressure off yourself and going back to, okay, well, what's made you a good practitioner in this first year, whilst also remembering, you know, I sort of look at my associates, you know, we've got a range from first year probably out to sixth year practitioners. The first, second and third years, I still see them as new graduates. You know, they really are. You sort of, it takes 2 or 3 years to become a mature, confident practitioner in any field, I would imagine.
Yeah. I think that positive affirmation of what you are doing is really important. But if you are going to then spend the time to investigate and reflect on why you might be feeling that way, I think it's important that you have the ability to sit there and say to yourself, okay, well, why am I feeling this way? Mm. Like, why do I feel robotic? Or why do I feel a lack of satisfaction in my job? What's leading to that? And some sort of things we've brainstormed, Matt, that might be part of that conversation with yourself would be, or with your mentor, could be things like, okay, well, what outcomes are you reaching with your patients? Can you look at instances where the outcomes with your patients have been really positive and have followed that treatment outline or treatment plan that you've been looking at? And what was the final result with that patient? Mm-hmm. You know, and using that to reflect, was it a successful outcome? Was it a not successful outcome? If it wasn't successful, why? Mm. If it was successful, why? Mm. And taking those things, and then you can look at, okay, it might seem robotic, but is it just that you've got a really decent treatment plan that you're following?
Yes.
And so maybe because you're doing the work prior to getting there, you have that strategy in play. You don't have to think through it too much.
You're building your database, aren't you, in your first year? You're probably seeing things that you haven't seen that often in student clinics. So all of a sudden, those acute wry necks, for example, that you might have seen once or twice in student clinic, you might have seen 5 times a week for 6 months. So all of a sudden, yes, it may feel robotic, but it's actually a confidence thing where you know, okay, I've done this. I know that my treatment has worked on the last 40 patients. I know that these exercises have helped. I know that what my intervention I'm helping with can achieve a positive outcome. So, you know, I would suggest it's probably not about beating yourself up, but really trying to look at the positives of what you've actually achieved for those patients. Sure. You know, as a clinic owner, I could almost categorically say, like, if a colleague of mine was building their patient that successfully, that patient, their database that successfully, I'd be fairly ecstatic, to be honest. And you know, this is what this sounds like in this situation and this person's this question that they've thrown at us.
And you do talk in your question about a certain amount of patient numbers, and that's different for every person and every clinic, as a pat on the back. But okay, what if that changes? What will that look like for you? Are you basing your success at work on how many patients you're seeing? Because that can be one measure of success. But does that also then come with a level of pressure? Is that what's maybe creating some of these feelings? Mm. Are you trying to meet, or are you being asked to meet certain KPIs that are creating an external stress on your workplace environment that you're thinking about as opposed to thinking about the patients per se? Do you feel like you have enough autonomy in your job?
Yes.
We often hear about, in particular from osteopaths, that they might lack the autonomy of what they'd like to do with patients, and the clinic that they're in prefers or heavily suggests that they work in a certain way.
Yes.
And for practitioners who are 5 years university educated, that can feel very constricting and lead to a really narrow or what feels like a really narrow focus, which then, you know, can lead to resentment in the workplace or that robotic deflation type feeling. And if that's the case, well, that's a bit of a harder question or harder answer, because there's probably some fundamental flaws in the mix between you and that practice that you might need to address. That's going to be a different type of, I think, conversation.
Yes. And I think, look, putting my business owner's hat on here, I think it's something that aligning your goals with your associates or with your colleagues is incredibly important for the business, because basically, you know, you might think of the business, God, I want them seeing as many patients as possible. What does that actually mean? Like, you know, I could tell you physically, I couldn't see 80 patients in a week, Craig. I don't know about you, but, you know, if you think that that's a thing, you're scheduled for 40 hours of work a week on a half hour time slot, so that's 80 patients. Is that realistic? And, you know, I think full disclosure, you need to say, well, look, no, I, you know, a full workload for me might be 50 patients in a week. And that's all I think I want to do. That's all I'm physically able to do and mentally able to do. And if that's the case, like, I don't think there's any problem with those conversations whatsoever, because as a clinic owner, the welfare of your people is so important, and so ensuring that, okay, well, look, you know, ideally I might want you seeing you as many patients as possible, but if 50 is the number, 50 is the number, and we work within that. And it might be, you know, I Craig and I both teach, and there's a reason for that. We've identified the numbers that we're comfortable in treating during a week, and we fill the other time with a different stimulation, which is, you know, helping future practitioners move into private practice. And that gives us a certain level of fulfillment, but it also, you know, I think I certainly find, you know, my best weeks are the ones where I'm reasonably full with patients, you know, full with patients for three and a half days, and then I'm at the uni for a day and a half, and I just love those weeks, and I think my week is just brilliant. But that took 6 years to find that balance, to know what's going to work best for me. You know, I know plenty of practitioners who go in and treat 20 patients a day, 3 days a week, and that's all they do, and they love that, and that's what they want to do. There's people who will only ever treat 8 patients in a day, but will happily do that 5.5, 6 days a week. So finding what's right for you, I think, especially 6, 9 months into your profession, may not feel right now, but it might feel right in a year. Or alternatively, you're going to get, once again, build on your database in a different sense. So in that period of time, you'll get a greater understanding of yourself as a practitioner, and knowing what's going to work best for you. And that doesn't have to be concrete. You know, I, as a younger man, I definitely felt like I could treat far more than probably I'd feel like I can treat now. And I'm not even that old. I won't get you to guess, but I'm younger than Craig.
Just. I think it's, as well, if you're in a position where you're treating a healthy amount of patients for how your clinic fits and what you feel like is, you know, a busy kind of work environment, have that discussion with your boss and say, look, I'm feeling this way. I would like to do a little bit more of this. Yeah.
Are there other ways I can contribute?
Yeah. Or like, I'm going to do some professional development in more rehab work or whatever it happens to be, and ask for the support, because, to be honest, if I've got an associate who's pretty busy, I'm probably looking at ways to ensure that they are happy in their job, because I don't want to then find someone else to replace them. And if you burn out or if you leave because you're not getting that feeling of satisfaction, and you end up going to a different place that maybe gives you something alternative to what you're getting in your current practice, no one wants that outcome. So. No. Have that conversation. And I think that sort of is a good way to sort of transition across to, well, what can you do?
Yeah.
Like, what are some things that you can look at? And one thing Matt and I are both pretty pretty keen about, and Matt sort of alluded to having a bit of a mix in workload, but we both have a pretty good work-life balance as well, and we prioritize doing our own, whether it be fitness or exercise or family time. And ensuring that we take our holidays allows us to be the best clinician we can for our patients. And that's really important too, because that also helps you prevent you from burning out.
Yes.
What else, Matt?
Well, look, I think we can delve deeper into that, can't we? That work-life balance, you know, and we've spoken about this in earlier podcasts, and I don't want to assume that you've listened to all our podcasts, but you definitely should. But if you haven't, the one thing that Craig and I both spoke about earlier is, I used to be guilty of this. I'm not anymore. My wife is certainly guilty of this, who is a practitioner. But coming home, jumping on social media and reading about work stuff, you know, being constantly engaged in what you do all the time from sun up to sundown, I just can't see how that's good for your health. You know, you need to switch off. You need to have something different in your life that isn't just work. Now, it's fine for some people. Some people just think, you know, live and breathe work, and that's what they do. And you ask them their hobbies, and they say, "Oh, well, my hobby is my work," and whatever else. And look, I get that. That's not me so much. Whereas, you know, I'll find with, as I said, my wife, she'll jump on and read different blogs and whatever about work stuff, and I just can't fathom why you would want to do that. All the time, exactly right. And so, you know, it's about A, finding things that give you enjoyment, but B, trying to also remove yourself from work in inverted commas, you know, and you know, that could be reading about work, you know, all your books that you read are medical based or whatever it is. You know, what did you enjoy doing before you became a physiotherapist or an osteopath or a chiropractor or a nurse or whatever it is? You know, maybe going back to something like that might just be a bit of an enlightening sort of thing.
I also think, just sorry on that as well, if you do find that you are someone who does maybe get drawn in, or I don't want to say trapped, but end up doing a lot of outside of work extra reading or whatever, that's fine. It's probably a pretty good trait. But if you're finding that's creating undue pressure on you or undue amounts of stress, maybe just book time with yourself. You know, all right, I'm going to read an hour's worth every 3 days,
right? Yep.
And that's fine. You have a little reading list of things that you're looking forward to reading, and it sits there on your computer or your iPad or you print it off, whatever, and you just make your way through that, but in some kind of structured way rather than it sort of being pervasive throughout all of your life.
Yes.
And it creates those boundaries that we talk about.
Oh, 100%, 100%. We've spoken about holidays previously. You know, I've had associates in the first year who really haven't taken holidays, and you know, I think that's detrimental, to be honest. I feel like, you know, and I know you can lose momentum definitely by taking a week off or taking 2 weeks off, but you know, you're hopefully going to have a long career in your chosen profession. A week is merely a bleep in a whole career. So, you know, schedule them in. We like booking our next holiday while we're on holiday. You know, it's a simple thing to do. Even if you just mentally know that, you know, I'm going away in October, I know I'm going away for a week in February as well, sort of thing. You know, you might book anything, but at least if you mentally know, well, that's when my next one is, it gives you something to really look forward to, and hopefully some wind down or some action time or whatever it is. But these all sort of file into, I guess, Craig, that sort of self-care, you know, caring for yourself and making sure you're able to give your best self at work.
And as Martin spoke about, looking at things like mindfulness, whether it's colouring or doing something that requires your full attention, flow activities, he referred to them as, or if it's using a meditation app, just so you can use those as little mini holidays, I like to think.
Absolutely.
Of them.
Exercise.
Exercise, yeah.
Like, I know, and you know, I know you're into riding, Craig. You're often here in Lycra, so I get a pretty quick reminder. And you know, I run, and you know, I go for 3 long runs. You even asked me today, why am I still running so long after doing the marathon a couple of weeks ago? And it's an interesting question, because it's, you know, I never really thought of it like that. I just thought of it, it's me time. You know, I get to run for an hour. I get to watch the sun come up. It's early, it's quiet. I've got two kids, they're very noisy. It's really nice just having quiet for an hour there first thing in the morning. And, you know, on a beautiful spring day like here in Melbourne today, you know, there's nothing better. And, you know, I'm incredibly grateful to be able to do that. So look after yourself, I guess, is the big one. You know, there's some things that we can control. Yeah, there's a lot that isn't in our control, but definitely exercise, diet, sleep, hydration, all these things you can control, and they're going to help your well-being. And hopefully, you know, I know we've sort of strayed a little bit from the question, but I think we feel like, both of us probably feel like complacency comes in when you, as a little bit of a tell that you're due to have a bit of a break.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you are due for a long weekend. Maybe you are due for that week off, you know, that you've been putting off for 9 months because you're in your first year of practice. You know, and as you get further and further in, I think you just start to know. I certainly start to feel like I get to a point where I'm like, you know, I need a holiday. I need a holiday. Let's book something in. And I can assure you, the last day of practicing before a holiday is the hardest day practicing you'll have. Mentally.
And I mean, just to, I guess, close off on that, we have allied health and medical practitioners have a huge dropout rate of practitioners and quite a high self-harm rate as well. And you know, I look at sort of warning signs around, okay, what sort of language makes me think that this person's not coping? If you're identifying that way, then there are places you can reach out to. And you know, maybe looking at self-care more is going to then prevent you from being somebody who doesn't end up, you know, burnt out from the profession or worse. So.
Yep. I think we finish on that note, Craig. Thanks for the conversation, mate. That was really good. If you do have any questions, folks, remember to look us up on Instagram at PracReady, or hit the email up with at PracReady@gmail.com, PracReady@gmail.com if you have any questions. Otherwise, have a fantastic day in practice. Thank you for listening to PracReady. If you wish to contribute, Craig and Matt would appreciate the support. Head over to www.patreon.com/PracReady and join our coffee club for $4 per month. That's www.patreon.com/PracReady. Do it now. Have a fantastic day and all the best in private practice.